T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Jeff Smoyan's in town because he's the boss of Emmis Broadcasting. That was the original founder of WFAN. And he was getting a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Talkers Convention where I spoke this morning. He just came fresh from that. And I knew he was going to be in town. And since we're going through this 30th anniversary of FAN and my last go-round, I thought we'd ask him to come in, because this is the man who invented the fan, who had the vision for sports radio, which now is a format that saved the AM dial, which probably has 1,200 stations in America. And it was all Jeff's idea many, many years ago, as a matter of fact. Welcome, Jeff. How are you?
Mike, I'm great. It's really fun to be here.
My pleasure. And congratulations for your award today. But, you know, the fans on the 30th anniversary of FAN, they might not know the story. Your company in Indianapolis, a radio operator who got an idea. Well, yeah. Tell us the story.
You know, it's funny. I had the idea when I was not paying attention in a class at USC almost 50 years ago. It was one of those things you file away in the back of your mind. And in those days, we had only FM stations. And when we bought WAVA in Washington and what became Hot 97 here, an AM came along with it. And at that time, we bought it from the Doubleday family, who owned the Mets. And so you had the Mets for half the station. You have country music.
Right. And WHN.
WHN, yep. Largest country music station in America, which yep. made it about 25th in New York.
Right.
So we had to decide and said, you know, if I'm ever going to do this, this is the time. I always made the shopping center analogy. It was like having a big department store, because you had the Mets, so you knew you had people coming 175 days a year to listen right. to the Mets. So we thought, this is the time to do it. Brought it up, met with my senior managers.
Was it an overwhelming plurality? Did everybody want to do it?
Or nobody wanted to do
it. No one wanted to do it.
As a matter of fact, Joel Hollander was one of our sales managers, our right. sales manager,
right.
And Steve Crane, who was one of the original founders, and Norm Gerwitz
right.
Were the only 4 votes in a manager's meeting. And everybody else voted against it. And I walked out of the meeting, and Steve said, what do you want to do? I said, you can't lead where others won't follow. We're not going to do it. And the next day, Rick Cummings, who then and now is head of programming in the company, who was the first employee of the company, came into my office with Doyle Rose, who was then running the radio group.
Right.
And they said, we still think it's a stupid idea, but we owe you one. This is your baby. So we'll do it. And in our culture, we have a lot of needling. And so for the first couple of years, FAN didn't do much.
Right.
And
you're a successful radio company out of Indianapolis.
Yep.
Who one of your first employees was David Letterman.
David Letterman was my first, did middays, the first station I ran.
Right. So the first station, you have David Letterman, you hire him. He yeah. becomes one of the Emmis guys, too. He's like a stockholder, right?
Yes, he was a board member
okay.
at one time.
So the bottom line is, you guys come from Indianapolis yeah. to run a station in New York and
right.
now start this all-sports station.
That's right. Yeah, of course, on the other hand, we're the same guys who started hip-hop. So
right.
what do we know about hip-hop?
Right.
But the reality is that we did it, and we made a lot of mistakes. I always kid that Greg Gumbel was our first morning man.
Yep.
There were more people probably in the studio today with the two of us that listened to Greg the first year. Because we were geniuses, we thought Pete Franklin would be a great idea. We brought Pete in from Cleveland. That didn't work very well. But, you know, you fell your way along. And
you guys were good businessmen. And now you're losing a pretty good amount of money on the station, right, in the first year or so?
Oh, my God, yeah.
You're probably thinking about pulling a plug, right?
And I'm surrounded by world-class needlers. So it's 5 o'clock. It's like, it's 5 o'clock. We just lost $19,221
in
fan
today. This every day, right?
Every yeah. day. Because yeah, yeah, that's our culture. It's a
right.
lot of fun.
Right.
Jim Lampley called it the Vietnam War of Emmis. never forget that. I'll never forget. I remember the first anchor, and in those days I was very involved, especially with this station.
Sure.
I was the one who had the idea of the top of the hour
right.
greatest moments in sports
right.
and even picked them. And And I'll never forget, Susan Waldman was the first anchor.
We even have the sound. Where's Mons? Get Mons, because Chernoff pulled some sound today. Get Mons in here. We'll play a little of it if we go along. We're talking with Jeff Smolian. We got a little sound that we can play, so we'll do that. My regular board op is out today, is having a baby, so that's why Chris is. So I have someone else on the board. So we pulled some stuff that we'll get to it. We're talking with Jeff Smolian, who was the founder of WFN with Emmis Broadcasting. He still owns Emmis Broadcasting. He long ago sold WFN, which we'll get to, and that was for an interesting reason. But here it is, you're hemorrhaging money. How committed were you to continue? Now, you probably didn't like losing money. You probably didn't have too many stations that were losing money, right?
And what was funny is, and we really talked about in the beginning, who do we put on for mornings? And we thought in those days it was like, can you do sports in the morning? So the idea was Imus, but Imus was under contract to NBC.
So you thought of Imus?
We thought of Imus in the very beginning, because we knew Imus had an audience that was male, and that they were on the periphery.
Would translate well to sports, which it wound up doing,
So it was losing a lot of money. We bought the NBC stations in 1988.
Yep.
So we went on the air on July 4th weekend, basically, of 87. And a year and a half later, we're buying NBC. In those days, you couldn't keep 2 AM and 2 FM. So we took the better signal, which was 660, and we took the better FM signal, which was 97.1. So Hot 103.5 became Hot 97. And Fan went from 1050 to 660.
Yep.
And with that, we inherited Imus. And I'll never forget, his agent was a guy named Mike Lynn.
Sure.
Wonderful guy.
New Line Cinema.
Right.
Yep.
Mike had also been Robert W. Morgan's agent in Los Angeles.
Right.
And there were some legendary stories that I can't tell on the air about Mike and Robert W. But we laughed and we said, Imus had just come out of rehab. We had the New York Mets that were pretty much either in or headed to rehab.
Right, and just coming off a World Series.
Coming out of the World Series.
Team is going to rehab.
That's right, and then heading into rehab the next year.
Right.
And a radio station that was hemorrhaging money. And I remember sitting in Mike's office and saying, well, let's put Imus on. What could possibly go wrong? But at that time, and I'll never forget, our bankers were saying, you know, you're making money with all these things, but what are you doing with this thing? You know, you really should look at this. Well, when the bankers tell you you should look at this, it's like, you know. And it was funny, Mike, because we did a lot of research, and the research, the first thing we thought we had to be is the place that people went for sports. And I'll never forget the first research project, probably 6 months in. And 6 months in, it was like preference for wins and WCBS for sports, like 85-15. Fan was a blip on the radar. Honest to gosh, a year later, it was flipped. And it was like place for sports, Fan, 85, wins and WCBS 15. So the perception changed along with Imus. It hit. You guys came on the air.
Right, after that.
And it just all came together. So it went, and I always say the line between a genius and an idiot is very fine.
And you had then something that all of a sudden, within a couple of months, was now the toast of the town. You had now the hottest station in America.
In America. And it was funny is that
you had Imus in the morning, you had this new team, Mike and the Mad Dog, in the afternoon, and you were like the toast of the town.
We were and I always say the line between a genius and an idiot is very fine.
Right.
When you're on the wrong side of the line, you're an idiot. And when you're right side, you're a genius.
How close did you come to pulling the plug before Mike and the Mad Dog, before Imus?
We probably wouldn't have done it another year.
You wouldn't have.
Okay. I don't know. You know, it really depends.
I always tell people, without Imus, there's no sports talk radio.
No, that's
true. Because you're going to cancel long before Mike and the Mad Dog ever come down the pike.
It's a good question.
Probably.
Because it's right, because it had to start. And Joel always to this day says the worst meeting he ever had in his life was walking down the street one day, and I said, Joel, there's no business on this radio station. How could this be? And he said, my style, I'm not much of a screamer. And he said, you're sort of walking in the middle of, like, you know, Park Avenue saying, why can't you write something and sell something to somebody? And then it turned, and then it just became this iconic station. And it's, it's funny. I always said, people say, were you sad selling the Mariners? Were you sad doing this? Selling Fan was the toughest.
You always said that. Now, you did sell Fan soon after your emergence with Fan Takes Off. You now have a chance to buy. You always had a dream of owning a baseball team.
Well, yeah. It was funny. We always enter every project as, you know, could it make money? I had a theory about the regionalization of sports, radio, and mostly television, the whole cable idea. And I always say, we were in the wrong market. It was too early.
Hey, you saw the future of sports where franchises now, everybody makes $1 billion profit.
Yeah. Yeah.
You just were in too early.
That's too early in a tough market.
In a tough market.
Seattle's a tough market.
And at that time, the owners were not binding that well, right? They didn't want guys at the table who didn't bring their own money. Like, they wanted everyone to have enough money to play, right?
We used to joke that to own the Mariners, you needed to be a billionaire. To own the Yankees, if you had a paper route, you were okay.
Bingo. Because they had enough revenue.
Because the revenue was totally unequal. I was one of the first people to talk about revenue sharing. And I'll never forget, you know, having debates with the Yankees and the Dodgers. And they did get it through, but it was we had a problem. We were the only, I think, one of two markets that had no cable TV.
How long did you own the Mariners?
Owned it 3 years.
Only 3 years.
89 to 92.
And did that make the idea, as you watched Fan become this iconic station, it had to hurt a little bit, huh?
Well, we sold Fan afterwards.
No, I know that, but I mean, the fact that you didn't keep, you would have kept Fan otherwise. I mean, Fan would have been part of your portfolio for a long time.
What happened was, you know, we had the challenges with baseball.
Right.
Right during that time, we had a banking revolution and a recession.
Right.
So the whole radio industry, I mean, we went from, you know, again, one day the banks want to lend you money. The next day they go, no, we'll call a loan.
Right.
One day your bank, you know, has a media division. And the next day the media division's gone and they went out of the loan. So everything changed and we had too much debt.
Yep.
And we needed to do something. And Mel was very wise. Mel basically knew that he wanted to take Infinity public. And he knew, this is in 92. This is right after the baseball for us. And he knew that nothing had as much cachet on Wall Street as this radio station. You guys and Imus.
Yep.
And he used that to be the anchor. So it's the old story. He offered me money, which was unheard of. And it was a price in which he had to say, look, this solves all the company's problems. You know, so it was the right decision. It was a painful decision, but that was and it really made Infinity.
You've gone on to a great career. We're talking with Jeff Smolian from you're one of the more respected guys in the business. You have been forever. You've been in the business forever from MS Broadcasting, and I guess it's a very good thing that wherever you go, FAN follows you. As being the founder of Sports Talk Radio and the founder of FAN is a big part of your resume.
It is. It's funny. And I've had a very fortunate career. I was a U.S. ambassador and run Emmis and done international radio and television stations. But it's one of those things they always ask about. They ask about FAN. They ask about negotiating a peace deal between Israel and the PLO. And they ask about what was it like to have Ken Griffey Jr. and Sr. play together. So those are the questions I get. And then at my age, they ask what it's like to raise a 13-year-old girl. But that's another.
Yes, thing. I have a 12-year-old and a twin, accompanying twin boy. So yes. We're talking with Def Smolian. You had Junior, A-Rod at a very young age. Had those guys
actually
together.
A-Rod came after us.
Oh, he did. You didn't have him 1 year. He was in the minors. He wasn't in the majors yet. Okay, so you never had A-Rod on the parent club.
Nope.
Okay,
nope.
Just Junior on the parent club.
We had Junior, and we brought Senior in.
And you had the biggest star in baseball, right? I mean, he was an incredible player.
Best. That was the one thing I loved watching Junior play every night. We would come in. We were one of the few clubs where our offices were away from the ballpark.
So did you guys realize how good A-Rod was going to be? Did you have the reports where that he was going to be that special?
Yeah, we knew that, and we knew Junior. I mean, by then, Junior was
already a big player.
Already a star.
Yes.
But I think that was the you know, having Junior was the most fun.
What was the hardest part of owning a team?
No revenue.
It's very just simple. Trying to get that market to produce revenue.
And it was funny because my closest friend in the world was the president of the team. When we sold the team, he said, what could we have done differently? And I said, you look back now 30 years later and say, I promise you, this is the best management that you'll ever do. We really did things in the stadium, which in those days were revolutionary. I mean, we did thematic music, which got us in a little trouble.
Right.
I remember we had Louis Polonia, and he had the problem in Milwaukee, and we played She Was Just 17, you know what I mean, when he came up to bat. But we did all sorts of things like that. We had singles nights. We had contests. We had indoor fireworks, which Major League Baseball almost shut us down. Because you really inherited a franchise, which is a blank slate. In marketing in those days, we used to say, if you own the Red Sox or the Yankees, your marketing campaign is the season starts on April 6th.
Come join us.
Come join us.
That's
right.
Yeah.
In Seattle, it was like, oh, God, those guys suck. Right. So you had to do that.
Plus, you didn't have any probably radio deal, no cable TV deal, TV. I mean, that's the thing. No cable TV deal's a killer.
It was a killer. The Yankees in those days made $50 million a year.
Yep, from Madison Square Garden.
And our best offer was like $500,000. And I remember, because I'm kind of a wise ass.
Right.
And I guess I can jeopardize the CBS licenses if I use that phrase. And I said to the in those days it was TCI, was John Malone,
right,
of all people, one of his guys. And I said, before I would, you know, give away our cable TV rights for, you know, $500,000, I'd rather snap pictures of our team playing and walk around downtown showing people the pictures of the games. So you had that. And it was tough. It was a wonderful community.
How much time did you spend out there?
I spent a lot. I commuted.
You've always lived in Indianapolis all
always
these
lived
years.
In Indianapolis. So yeah. I would get up during the season. I was there during homestands. And then I would come back to Indianapolis and do my Emma stuff. And during the winter, I was divorced then, but I had my kids on the weekend.
Right.
So Monday morning, I'd drop them off at school and then jump on the plane and go to Seattle for the week and come back late Friday.
Tell me, we're talking with Jeff Smalling, the chairman of Emmis Broadcasting out of Indianapolis, which is a radio company, has been for many, many years, and a broadcasting company, and was the parent company of WFAN and started the All Sports Radio. That was Jeff's idea, as we've discussed. Letterman, tell me how you hired, where you found Letterman. I mean, you got a station. Didn't you buy a station, or your dad helped you get a station out of college? That was that your first thing? I don't know what was your dad? What was his business?
Basically real estate.
Real estate?
Real
so
estate.
He helped you get a finance a station out of college.
He had a cousin who owned a small station.
Okay.
I got out of law school and was going to start with a couple friends in California.
And you went to USC, right?
Went to USC undergraduate in law school.
Right.
And he said, come home. I got a cousin who's got a failing station. He needs help. I will invest in it if you'll come back and run it.
Right.
And I said, no, I'll start my own company. He said, well, so you start your own company here. It's all right. This is while you're waiting, while you're putting together a deal. So I did it, and we switched it to News Talk and Sports.
Right.
I was just talking to John Minko about it.
You hired John Minko, too.
John Minko,
absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And but we started it, and our news, it was like news in the morning, talk in the midday.
Right.
Sports in the afternoon. And Letterman and I had mutual friends. I didn't know Dave. But he was doing weather on Channel 13.
He's doing the weather. He's a weatherman.
Weatherman on Channel 13. And you watched him, and it was just hilarious. You know,
he was a funny weatherman.
Oh, my gosh. Right. I mean, he would say, you know, there's a thunderstorm over Muncie, but don't worry about that because there's there's ICBMs headed toward Lafayette, so don't worry about the weather. And he would just do crazy. You know, he said it's 52 in Greensburg and 52 in Kokomo, and they'll play that tie-off tomorrow. Just crazy stuff. And so I talked to him, and he said, yeah, it'd be fun. And he knew nothing. And he was absolutely brilliant, but,
Did he hit it off right away?
No. It was a disaster.
Oh, really?
But in the sense that David, for guys like me who were in our 20s, he's the funniest human being who ever lived.
Right.
But the problem is the people who listen to talk radio are 70 years old.
Right.
And, for example, I'll never forget, one day I come back from lunch and a guy says, that guy's a communist. You got a communist on the air. What are you going to do? I said, what did he do? He said, I called on the air and I said, the communists are in Carmel. And you know what that SOB said? I said, what did he say? He said, give them Carmel. The schools are overcrowded. You can never find a parking space. Give them Carmel. Hold the line at Nora, which is another suburb. And this was Dave. And so you had two audiences. You had a cult of young people.
Who loved them.
Who just, there were times I would die laughing. And then you had older people who didn't get the joke. So the problem was, as you know, talk radio is mostly conservative older people.
Right.
It wasn't a rousing success, but the station did okay.
You've always had stations on. You've always had connections to both coasts. You've always had stations in LA. You've always had big stations in New York. So you've always kept connected.
Yeah.
Interestingly, for a Midwest company, for an Indianapolis company, you've always kept your. You went to school on the West Coast.
Yeah.
So you've always been attracted to both coasts.
Yeah, and I when I went to school in California, I went to undergraduate. I was going to get a master's at Stanford in telecom, and somebody said, "Go to law school, and you'll be an expert." You know, if you want to be an entrepreneur. In those days, it was funny. Nobody thought about business school. It sounds so crazy.
Right.
And I wrote my law review article on the FCC. And then my dad, convinced me to come home. And when I first went home, I said, what have I done? Why would anybody live here? But now I love it. I'm very proud of Indianapolis. It's come a long, long way.
It's a good town.
It's a wonderful town.
It always has been. And you've become obviously a very big part of it. And you've stayed in radio all these years. Yeah, you're a radio guy. You've always been a radio guy.
Always been a radio guy, Mike.
Where do you see it now? I know you believe in a lot of this new stuff with FM and with the mobile chip and all the different things. Yeah. What do you see? What is your vision for radio going forward?
Well, my mission has been turning on the FM chip. Every smartphone in the world has an FM chip in it. So I got drafted by the industry a number of years ago, and then the NAB asked us to build software around it. So we built Next Radio. The idea is that we want to turn on the FM chip in every smartphone, simply because we used to sell 40 million Walkman a year, and everybody walked around town listening to their radio station.
Yep.
We don't do that anymore. So the only device that people carry
is a phone.
It's a smartphone, and they look at it 150 times a day.
My God, yes.
Or if you have a teenager, it's 1,050 times a day.
Never let go of it.
Yeah. And so the idea was there's a radio in there. Compared to all the streaming alternatives, it's free. It doesn't use your data. It doesn't drain your battery as much. So our mission is to sort of do that. Also, as an industry, we can sell interactive advertising. And interactive advertising in this day and age are very, very critical to advertisers, because they learn more about you.
Right. So, and you think this is the wave of the future, no question, right? You've always been a visionary guy. I mean, that's been your strength. I mean, it really is. You started Sports Talk Radio. You had the right call with baseball.
Yeah.
Anyone who has entered and stayed in has made a gazillion dollars.
I
mean,
it's funny.
Look at Loria. He's going to leave Miami, which has been a terrible franchise, making $1 billion in 10 years.
And it's funny. It's funny.
You're one of the rare guys who didn't hit it big in owning a team.
And we made money. And listen,
people make a lot of money with teams.
We had a chance to buy the Minnesota Vikings and didn't for a crazy reason. I was taking my kids to Europe on a vacation, didn't want to. Right. But, you know, I have a favorite saying. If any one of 20 things had happened, my company would be 100 times bigger. Any one of 20 other things that happened, I'd be sweeping the streets. So my life has been very, very good, Mike.
You know, you've done a lot of active things, and you enjoy doing it. So you're very active still, right? You still do a lot. You still like being involved, right?
Very active in the industry, and I'm
And the guys are still. It's amazing the names you talk about that I remember when I heard their names when I first was trying to get hired in this company and still trying to get on the air. Those guys are still with you. Yeah. I mean, a lot of them are with you 30 years later. A lot of those Emmis guys who all obviously, you know, looked at FAN from afar now, but I've bumped into. I see you more because you're at a lot of the events we go to.
Yeah.
You came to our Mike and the Mad Dog thing at Tribeca, which was nice. We see
you.
I see you getting this award today at Talkers where I spoke. So, I mean, I see you a lot. But you've kept a lot of those people around you all these years. Your business has been very much, your company has been very much like a family.
It really is. Well, as a matter of fact, the guy who replaced David Letterman, when David took the job and said, I'm going to do this for a year and I'm going to go to Hollywood. And he went to Hollywood. As a matter of fact, when he went to Hollywood, he would send us back reports. We'd pay him a little bit. I mean, I can still remember he sent us back one from the Rose Parade. He said they ran out of roses, so they made it in pork rinds. And he said the stench was all the way to La Cañada. I mean, just crazy stuff.
It is nuts, huh?
But Rick replaced David, and Rick and I became, this is in the mid-70s. And I said, I'm going to start my company. And I hired him, and when we went on the air, and we've been together ever since.
And you still own stations here in New York now?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Hot 97,
absolutely.
WBLS,
yeah.
LIB.
Yeah.
We actually own your competitor, the ESPN
station.
You're
the lessee of the
lessee.
Station.
Yes, absolutely. Or I guess I'm the lessor. I don't know. You can see I don't remember much from law school. Yeah, I'm the lessor.
Yeah. Yes.
And so...
Yes, that's true. So you've still been very active. You really have.
Yeah, and I love it. And
and you got a nice award today, which you deserve. You know, Talkers Magazine. That's a very nice award. You got a Lifetime Achievement Award, which is very deserved. So
it's funny. I ran an article. There were two articles like a 2 weeks talk. Referred to me as the beloved, and I went, oh my God, I guess I'm dead. I mean, we don't call somebody beloved unless the end is near.
Here's one thing. In a business where, let's be honest, there's a lot of backbiting and a lot of infighting. You are one guy. A lot of people there's not a lot of people that dislike you. You have a lot of friends.
Thank you.
You have been a guy that absolutely everyone says nice things about, which is rare, very rare. And there's not a lot of guys like that. I mean, you know,
thank you.
You know, and maybe that means you didn't step on enough toes or
probably
something,
not.
But you know what? But it's not your way.
And by the way, in my last 6 months of Seattle, they would say some bad things about me.
All right, listen,
I promise you.
Here you go. Susan intro what you mentioned. Chernoff pulled some things. Let's listen. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Sports Radio 1050, WFAN, New York City. All sports, all the time.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the first broadcast of WFAN All Sports 1050. You're sharing a part of radio history with us today. This is the beginning of the first 24-hour-a-day sports station. I'm Susan Waldman. The message board outside Yankee Stadium today reads, Vintage Guidry, and last night was indeed a classic Gator performance. Guidry struck out 9 and only walked 1 as the Yanks extended their lead to 2 games in the AL East. They're going on right now up at Exhibition Stadium and in the top of the fifth. If there's no score.
So there's Susan Waldman, who was doing overnights at that time, who went on to be a reporter and then a broadcaster, who is still doing Yankee games 30 years later, is in the Baseball Hall of Fame as as a female pioneer broadcaster. So that's the first voice of the station. So Susan Waldman's still here 30 years later.
And, you know, I tell you a quick story.
Go ahead.
When she went on the air, I didn't think she was very good. And I thought she was not – it's funny. She sounded a lot better than I remember 30 years ago. And we ended up making her a field reporter. And she ended up
– being an incredible field reporter.
The best.
One, broke more stories than anybody in history.
And I'll never forget when I was in Seattle, she came to the ballpark one night and, you know, always revered her opinion. And I said, hey, who's the best young manager? Because in that time, I believe it was Jimmy LaFever, we were thinking about making a change. And she said – Buck Showalter. Buck Showalter, best guy. He had just been fired. And so we put him on the short list, flew him out.
Would have been a great hire.
George Steinbrenner sees this and said, why are they interviewing a guy that's fired? Get him back here. Got him back, and a week later he had the Yankee job.
How about that?
And I always say Susan Waldman ended up getting Buck Showalter the Yankee job.
How about a great story?
Yeah.
And she's still doing the Yankee games now, 30
best.
Years later.
Yep.
You brought Pete Franklin in. I could tell you this.
Yeah.
I came in, I have a job at CBS, I want to be on the air here, I came in for an interview, they think I want to be a producer, so they sit down, Pruder and those guys, Luke Griffin, guys you hired as your program, people say, Mike, you're overqualified to be a radio producer, look at the job you have at CBS. I say, no, I want my own show. They go, are you kidding? We're bringing in the greatest talent in the country.
Yeah.
We're
yeah.
bringing in Pete Franklin.
Absolutely right.
Here's Pete Franklin, listen.
Everything I say is offensive. Everything I say. So I got to be careful. My name is Claude now. I will be the Invisible Man. The damn radio station was taking out ads apologizing for me the last few weeks. What kind of crap is that, for crying out loud?
Okay, Pete, nice talking to you today.
Yeah, it was. Sure it was. All right. Do I offend anyone? I'm not here to offend you, damn it. You suckers out there, I ain't there to offend you. Screw you. Right. Screw you all. The hell are you calling for? Why are you calling for? If you don't like what the hell you hear, damn it, don't call. Don't call. Don't call. Today I walk in the station, Spencer Ross throws his arms around me. Says, I'm not mad at you. I says, I know. He does it. So the program director can see it and have an orgasm in the hallway. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. In fact, I'm not mad at anyone today. I'm not. Even the people who put this building together. 2 weeks ago, they had a flood in the bathroom and it flooded my room. You people think I'm kidding. Today, they got holes in the building where it's leaking because of the rain, and they took my ash can out of the office. I got a flood outside the door on the carpet. What are they doing to me here? Give me an office that don't leak, that doesn't have urine in it. Give me something decent, crying out loud. Stop apologizing for me. Set me free if you don't like it. Fire me. 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 Let's start a movement to fire Pete Franklin. Instead, the radio station is apologizing for me. Fire me if you don't like me. If the critics don't like me, screw the critics. Bleep on them. And bleep on management. And bleep on the callers. And now, let's take a traffic report. Here's Dennis O'Mara.
I remember that like it was yesterday. And here's the funny thing. He gets wind of, all right, he's going to be out, right?
Yeah.
And he knows that there's Dog who's on the rise and me.
Yeah.
He doesn't like Dog. Dog takes his bell and uses it on the air. He tells Dog, if you touch my bell again, I'm going to ram that bell.
Is that right?
Right? Goes crazy on him. He calls me in his office. He goes, you know one thing? He goes, one thing. He says, you know more about sports than almost anybody I've ever heard. You're okay. I think your partner is a fool. Or he's going to, you know, if that's going to be your partner, he's going to be a fool. And I said, no, he's a good guy, Pete. No, he's an idiot. But he didn't like Dog for some reason. Right. Years later, we saw him. Dog and I sat down with him in San Francisco when he was working.
For many years.
And we had the greatest lunch with him. He was the nicest. He could not have been. I'm so happy for you guys.
Yeah.
I'm happy you did well. I'm glad you're doing well. He could not have been nicer.
Nicest man. And it was funny because it was just one of those things. And it was, and you know, the guy who put it together, John Shannon, may he rest in peace. But John had this view of a national radio station, you know.
And Franklin was a god in Cleveland.
A god in Cleveland.
Absolutely.
And Lampley, you know, Lampley was.
They all were.
All were.
They said, we're bringing in the biggest guys in the country.
Yeah. And the idea was they'd never, and you know, and listen, I could store. People said, what did you think? I said, I was so happy to get the damn thing on the air. And it was funny because we hired Shannon, and Shannon's wife gave this the name. Said, how about calling WFAN?
And Luke Griffin, only reason I got on was Luke Griffin had done a syndicated show with Jim Nance.
Yeah.
Jim Nance and I had already been worked together at CBS, and Jim Nance said, Luke, give him a chance. Luke gave me a weekend show, and that's how I started. Then I started filling in for Pete. I was doing Pete's show more than Pete, because he was always sick.
Yeah.
So that's how I got in the door. And if it wasn't for Jim Nance, I never would have gotten the door.
I can still remember the first recollection of your name. Frances is at CBS. The guy's a genius. What does he know about radio? But he's a genius. And everybody said, he's a sports genius. And it was, hey, we'll give this guy a shot. And that was it.
And it wasn't for Nance, I would not have gotten on the air. That's how it started. And it was Luke Griffin, who did. Pruitt didn't last very long. He died very early,
John
right?
Pruitt
he had a heart
died,
attack that first year, right?
Died,
John Pruitt.
Died very, I can still remember the funeral on Fifth Avenue.
Right.
And, John died very early.
Right, it was like the first year.
And John Shannon didn't last
no.
long. John did die, but not there.
You guys were doing insane things, though, for a local station. You were flying up that guy's in from around the country. Oh, that cost a lot of money.
Spent a lot of money.
It was the old
George Allen thing. We gave, you know, John Shannon an unlimited budget, and he exceeded it.
I got one more. Listen to this. Okay. Play the third one. Go ahead.
Sports Radio 66. In the morning.
Please give a nice hand to Mike Wallace, the President of the United States, Bill Clinton. Good morning, Mr. President.
Good morning, Dom. How are you?
Barbara Walters has a special on ABC News. She's here now. Good morning, Ms. Walters.
Good morning.
Geraldo Rivera. Good morning, Mr. Rivera. Dan Rather is here with us with a Autobot Express turquoise buffalo dinner. Here he is now. Jeff Greenfield. Good morning, Mr. Greenfield. Here he is now. Good morning, Senator Dole.
Don, how you doing?
And y'all give a nice hand to Tim Russert from NBC.
Imus in the morning, 2020 sports. Let's go to the audio tape.
And the British media have hounded him since, so he's getting the bodyguard. Apparently, breaking up with his wife was hard for him to do. And that reminds me of a song.
No, don't sing, Mike.
Imus
in Washington's senior political analyst, the late Richard M. Nixon.
Imus in the morning.
Hey, Davis, have you seen my cowboy hat?
You trying to look like Imus all of a sudden?
Here now, some of the headline stories we're following for you in the Imus in Washington. Veteran broadcast journalist, Walter Cronkite.
Today, we turn the thumb screw.
The late General George S. Patton.
At ease, as you were.
Imus in the morning here with one of the pioneer rock and roll disc jockeys, Scatzo.
So one of the plaster casters shoves a bong in my mouth.
My bat friend, Rush Limbaugh. Good morning, Rush.
Mis amigos, muchísimo.
My brother sounds a little torqued off this morning, doesn't he?
Well, I'm very happy this morning because Butterbean got another win last night. When Butterbean gets them in the corner, they don't get out alive.
God, hey, why don't you go work for Walmart?
Shut up and comb your face.
And leave my brother alone, brother. What's the matter with you?
Do you have Bo Deedle's number?
No, Fred, we don't. You know who?
Okay, do you have OJ's number?
It's Summers in Salzburg. Weekdays from 10 to 1.
Jet fans have a right to boo, but the Knicks fans don't have a right to boo.
Russell,
hold on a second. You know what? You don't get a merit badge for playing hard every day. You paid millions of dollars to do that, for crying out loud.
Getting under the skin of Russ.
Gallipari might do himself and the team a great deal of justice if he uses you as a recruiter to get that Grant Hill to come to New Jersey.
I'm Jason, not Jesus.
Mike and the Mad Dog. Dog sits next year at the Knick game and does play-by-play at a game I'm watching. Dog just talks the whole game. Yeah. And I'm so used to it, I don't even pay attention.
He does it. I'm in a long soliloquy about Mike. You see that? Dog in here. Say it again.
And the New York Yankees are world champions.
Indeed so. And folks, here's your manager of the New York Yankees.
Thank you.
The 50,000-watt clear channel voice of the Mets, Jets, Knicks, Rangers, and St. John's basketball. The Fan. Sports Radio 66, WFAN New York.
You know, Jeff, when you hear that, and thanks for turning off, giving me these stuff to kind of reminisce through the years, by the mid-90s, Bill Clinton's campaign got back because he was on the Imus show.
Yep.
He takes New York, and all of a sudden, he winds up being president. Without Imus, he doesn't become president. Yep. That and, you know, being on The Tonight Show, the bottom line is Imus had everybody, every politician. We used to walk in, you'd walk in, who's here today? John McCain, who's here? You know, George Bush Sr. Yeah. Imus was on top of the world.
Yep.
And Mike and the Mad Dog had gotten, so big in New York, the station was off the charts in those days. It was amazing what we were like in the 90s.
Yeah, it really was. And it was fun. And like I said, it was so much fun, and it's gratifying to see it just become an iconic American experience. I laugh, and about every year somebody does a novel or a long-form article or a documentary, and I swear it's like once a year somebody calls and says, all right, we're doing a story on Fan. We got to talk to you.
That's it.
And it was fun.
Listen, you'll always be, no matter what you've accomplished, and you've accomplished a lot, Fan will always be a big part of your resume for that reason.
Thank
because
you.
It was sitting in some class at USC, it was your idea, and it didn't turn out too badly.
You know, it's not. I gotta tell you, how's our time? We got time for
you
gotta,
go ahead.
When I was in baseball, I had a dear friend who shall remain nameless, who's in Seattle, who owned another team. And what you don't think about is that this experience changed ball clubs, because it used to be that if you owned a ball club or if you were a player, you got ripped in the morning, you read the newspapers, and that was it. But this made it 24/7.
24. And immediate.
Immediate. So you had a bad game, you're leaving the ballpark, you hear the host and the fans ripping you.
Right after
the
game.
You drive into the ballpark, you hear the host
Absolutely.
And the fans ripping you. And you are ripped 24/7.
Yep.
So it really, what I didn't think about.
Changed America.
It changed America. It changed how all of these teams related to one another and how they experienced their jobs. And so this is a dear friend who is very outspoken, was in baseball in those days, is still in baseball, and was in Seattle. And he said, I'm driving down the street and I'm hearing you get ripped by one of the sports talk show hosts. The host is ripping you. And he said, I'm thinking to myself, the guy who invented this godforsaken format now owns a ball club, and he's getting ripped by the format he invented. He said, I'm not a religious man, but I realized then that there was a God in heaven.
Because it's true. And true. Think about it. As we saw you last, we're talking with Jeff Smolian, the chairman of MS Broadcasting. We saw you at the Tribeca thing, and that was the whole idea of the 30 for 30 hour, is that Mike and the Mad Dog changed the way sports are covered in America.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
That's because of this format, and it's because everyone wanted to have a Mike and the Mad Dog in their town, and that's because one day you were sitting somewhere and came up with this format.
And by the way, that's one thing I've learned in this business. There are a lot of guys who wanted to be the next Mike and the Mad Dog, and we've talked about it in the show, I can still remember Robert W. Morgan was one of the original top 40 jocks. Brilliant, brilliant guy. Robert worked for us, passed away many years ago. And you could go to, Pittsburgh. You could go to Keokuk. You could go to Sioux Falls. And there was a Robert W. Morgan or Roger Morgan or Bob Morgan. And it was the same thing with Mike and Bander. Two guys in the afternoons who wanted to be Mike and the Mad Dog. And some of them had some talent. Some of them were just horrifically god-awful. But that's what success does. And I know how proud you are. I'm not sure what you're going to do after this year, but I think it'll be good.
Well,
I know.
Listen, I'm looking forward to doing that, but I'm also always going to be very proud of 30 years here and what we did together and what we did and what we accomplished with everybody here at the Fan. So that's obviously going to be the number one thing I'm ever going to accomplish. So I'm very proud of that, and that's why I wanted to have you in, because you're here and you were in getting an award, and you're the guy who started this whole thing. So
thank you
for a couple of minutes. Congratulations on your award,
Mike.
And again, thanks for the whole thing.
Pleasure.
Jeff Smullyan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.